From the south coast of the Golden State, it's Long Beach's most popular talk show, Live Talk with Alex Exum. The Live Talk phone lines are open and ready for your call at 562-543-1625. And now, your host for Live Talk, Alex Exum.
Before I get started tonight, I have to say to the Amazon drivers of the world, and I love you. I order on Amazon, we all do. You've got to stop driving and parking like you're police or emergency services. Every time I go down Ocean Boulevard, Termino Drive, it doesn't matter. Geminino. People have different pronunciations. I cannot go 20 feet in this city without Amazon trucks either parked and with their hazards on, like there's some sort of emergency services, or they're just kind of going so slow looking for addresses, stopping, starting. They've got to stop. I even complained to Amazon. I'm not kidding. I tweeted at Amazon today. That's my little side beef with Amazon. I love Amazon. But my gosh, they've got to curb these. They've got to curtail these drivers. It's driving me crazy. I can't go 5 feet in the city. All right, that being said, I have a special, special guest for you tonight. And you know I love to have authors. Other guests, not so much, because, well, I don't know. They don't have enough to say. We've had some great guests that weren't authors. I'm not trying to disparage anyone, but usually the authors are the best, and I have an author for you. Her name is Deanna Spingola. She's actually a prolific author. She's written several books and has a radio show called Spingola Speaks. The book I want to talk about tonight is called Screening Sandy Hook. And you know, we've talked about on this show in the Exum Experience, prescription pills. And we're going to get into that and vaccinations. And depending on how much time we have, the Sandy Hook conspiracy. And not really, it's not a conspiracy, but some of the evidence that it wasn't, because of course, you know, I've had my run-ins with the hoaxers and some of the shows, especially the one I did with C.W. Wade about Sandy Hook. So we're going to get into that. But just to give you a brief smattering, because she's a prolific researcher, I should say. She's written 3 books on the ruling elite. She's also written several books on textiles, if I'm not mistaken. And she's worked for several companies in that field. I'm sorry, mathematically intricate quilt designs, excuse me, and worked in the textile industry. She's also got a show called, you can find that at Spingola.com, called Spingola Speaks on the Republic Broadcasting Network that she does out of Chicago on Saturdays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And she's on the line right now. Deanna, thank you so much for being on Live Talk.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And speaking of Amazon, yesterday we didn't have electricity from 4 p.m. until 8 a.m. this morning. Ouch. But after 4 p.m., yesterday, nobody was doing anything in the neighborhood. Everything was shut down, but Amazon was still on the road, still making their deliveries. Well, nothing will stop an Amazon truck.
Well, you know what? They'll stop me, but I can't stop them, because I live in Long Beach, as you probably know. And it's just, I don't know if it's this city. I'm sure it's every city, especially right now with COVID and all that. But there must be an Amazon truck going down my street, every 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes, Deanna. So it's like, I understand we all need our goods, but these guys park. I tweeted it out. You were on Twitter following each other. If you look on my Twitter feed, it's a few down because I tweeted the show out. You'll see one car parked the wrong way on the street.
That.
Oh, you did. And there's two of them. It's like, there's not one. There's two blocking it. And Amazon, right. I mean, it's getting out of control. But Amazon, to their credit, tweeted at me and said, here's a link, tell us what happened and send us all the info.
So, oh my gosh.
At least they did that, but it's not going to help. Deanna, what are they going to do? They can't.
Exactly. It is what it is.
But they are hardworking guys, and it's not to knock them. I'm sure they've got some sort of insane quota where they've got to get how many packages out a day. I get it, but it's like, guys, they're not police. They're not firefighters. I mean, what happens when emergency vehicles need to come down and there's 10 Amazon trucks blocking fire hydrants and... Anyway, that's a side issue. I'm glad that you know what I'm talking about, though. At least they're active and delivering your packages there in the Chicago area.
Right. Right.
Well, okay. So listen, Deanna, I wanted to have you on. I read your book, quite some time ago, right? And I've heard your show. And found several interviews that you've done on the Sandy Hook incident, because I was researching this like crazy, because I tell people I'm a former conspiracy theorist. I had all sorts of conspiracy theories that I researched and went down many, many different trails. And because I lived in in Connecticut for several years, it was really close to my heart. So I had to research this, but I had a show, right? I had a podcast at the time. I wasn't on doing radio, but people kept asking me about it. Alex, what's your opinion? I know that you're into this kind of stuff and the occult and chupacabra and the Bermuda Triangle, weird, quirky things. And I used to always tell people, I'm like, I don't know. And this was the time, Deanna, when there was all this ridiculous stuff on YouTube, right? And of course, I'm sure you've seen some of the videos and
I saw them all.
You saw them all because you've done the research. If anyone's done the research, I have never seen. And we have to talk about your background, because I've never seen someone find so many little crumbs, little breadcrumbs, and then follow them to find out the truth. You're an excellent researcher, and there is evidence in there and things that I didn't know, and I'd done tons of research on Sandy Hook. But I found your work, and again, I said this before we started, but your epic tongue lashing of Wolfgang Halbig. We have to talk about him. He's got some big problems recently, and he's not doing so well. But
he wasn't doing well for a long time. I have a lot of reports, a lot of pages at screeningsandyhook.org or screeningsandyhook.net. Sorry. And if you do a search for Halbig, you will find his entire background from the time that he arrived in this country. You will find all of his court cases that I have researched. You will find the drugs that he has been on. You will find, the court cases, the lawsuits that he has filed. He is quite the character.
And I downloaded that PDF. It's a massive file, right, where you've pretty much laid out his entire career.
Probably, yes.
There was a PDF I found. And by the way, let me mention that before we get too deep in it. Spingola.com, also SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. All of those sites kind of tie together, but there's different content on each one, so people are going to want to check them all out, right? Because there's audio and then your books and everything. But since we're talking about Halbig, I don't want to make this whole thing about him, but he just lost he was just arrested, rather. He didn't lose the defamation case. That was Fetzer, but he had Lenny Posner's ID. How the heck he got that, I don't know. But he was arrested for having his ID, and I saw the photo, I guess the booking photo of him. He just did not look well. And I say that after seeing many interviews with him on many different shows, right? And he looked a little healthy. He just looked better. And I'm not going to say he's having mental issues, but you take one look at that picture, you can see things aren't going well just by the photo alone.
Well, he was having mental issues. He was on psych drugs.
That explains a lot.
Right. I have one article in here, Wolfgang Halbig, Psych Drugs and Court Cases, where I lay out everything that he was on, when he was on it. I've talked about his so-called free home. I've talked about him being a Florida State Trooper rookie. He was never a Florida State Trooper. He didn't pass you have to pass a certain amount of time. You're not qualified. You're a rookie for about a year. He never even made it through the rookie period.
Didn't I hear him? I think it was on your show. It might have been when he had called in, because I went through all this stuff where he talked about, well, when you go on the scene and there's, oh, that it was your show.
Right.
And he said, when you go on the scene and there's dead bodies, you're trying to tell me the parents wouldn't want to go see the children. I've been on the scene of, hundreds of crime scenes. He was suggesting, right? And so anyway, then you find out. So the guy, it's almost like he's one of these guys that's a security guard that wants to be a cop. And plays cop and kind of
that's
pretends.
That's pretty much how it was. He was just a fraud all the way around.
So, and I've had my run-ins with some of those people, and some of his followers when I put up a couple of, they're just podcasts, right, really, that I did on YouTube, and they, I mean, attacked me. I still am convinced there's the part of the reason I was thrown off YouTube when a lot of people were getting thrown off. I was thrown off before Alex Jones, if you can believe that.
Wow. Are
you ready for this? For trying to prove that Sandy Hook happened. And not the other way around. He got thrown off for saying it didn't happen. I did this entire two-part series. It was about 3 hours with a gentleman, C.W. Wade, who runs Sandy Hook Facts.
I love him. He's wonderful.
He's a great researcher as well, and he's a nice guy.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I only know him from the show. I haven't actually met him in person and on Twitter. But I had him on the show, and it was like the sun caught on fire. When that went on YouTube, I got all of these hate emails and comments, and they started flagging every video I did. They went through all my archives, flagged anything I ever said about Sandy Hook. So it's a vicious group. Have you had run-ins with these people?
With YouTube?
Yeah.
Not really. I've never put anything on YouTube. Whatever's on YouTube is what's put there by somebody else in behalf. But as far as Hal Bigg, what he does, and he does it extremely well, is that he uses emotion. And you barely get by somebody that uses emotion like he does, because he pulls you in, and he sounds so sincere. He's a very good actor, incredibly great actor.
No, he knows how to push the right buttons. And,
yes, he does.
And one of his things is this is the thing that I find interesting about him, because you could give him the proof and he doesn't really budge, but he's kind of latched on to certain things that usually, like you said, are kind of like the most emotional or sensational parts of Sandy Hook. And he just won't give them up, you know, and he'll just keep repeating them on many, many different shows, even though he has the answers and it's been proven, but he'll just keep repeating them because they know people go, oh my God, that's incredible. It sounds so incredible. It must be true. Nobody would say that if it wasn't true. Like, you know, where are the porta potties?
Right.
Who cleaned up the bodies? You know, those are the things he keeps saying, and you go, oh, and then there's video of people going around in a circle. Then you go look at it and see it's looped.
It's just
lie after lie after lie, but he said it so many times. And it sounds so outrageous, people go, it must be true. You repeat a lie enough, right, people start believing it. So, here's one thing I want to talk about. So we could talk about all these Sandy Hook, and I have on my notes here, Fetzer, right, I also have on here Tracy, right, just because these are some of the known lunatics who are still to this day, although I actually, when doing research recently, I found they've all pulled their sites. They pulled their blogs. They pulled their sites, so I think they're scared of all these lawsuits. Like I said, I mentioned Fetzer just lost a $1.1 million lawsuit to Lenny Posner. So it's getting ugly. Alex Jones has retracted a lot of his garbage, right, and since backed away from everything because, I mean, he's been deplatformed from everything. But listen, I want to ask you, just starting from the beginning, and I want to shut up because everyone's heard me, what made you get into your research about Sandy Hook and psych meds, let's say, and even vaccination, let's just say the psychiatric and pill industry. But what made you tackle this monumental topic?
Well, in every family, there are people who are vaccine damaged. And, so that was something that was very dear to me. And I just wanted to cover it for my own personal reasons. And I've been a researcher since I was a teenager. Now, I'm not going to tell you how many years that is, but I've done family history research for a very, very long time. Have sat in front of microfilm readers for hours and days and have spent a lot of time doing primary research, which means that you look at primary sources, not secondary. And when you're looking at a YouTube video, that's secondary, that's a secondary source. Somebody has compiled this. You don't know who it was that compiled it usually. There was one video that came out talking about Sandy Hook. It was compiled by Idaho Potato Picker or something. And in a video, there are no sources, no citations, nothing. And that's hearsay. If you can't document your sources, if you can't give a citation where somebody can go and look at that citation and decide for themselves and see why you believe what you believe and what you have written, then that is the way it should be. And these people who initially came out, and we had people coming out within 12 hours of the shooting saying that it was a hoax. Now, how can that possibly be?
Right.
In 12 hours?
They're auto hoaxers. Auto hoaxing is the term, right? They just, exactly. Everything's about, yeah, every shooting is a false flag.
Right. And, anyway, so I just decided that I was going to delve into this because of the children. That was my main focus, and because of my own family experience.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you had any connection to Connecticut or, Newtown or Sandy Hook or knew any of the family. I mean, I didn't know people from Newtown, but I lived in Connecticut for so long and it was, you know, Connecticut was dear to my heart. I still have family there. So when people were saying that nobody died, the town was fake, like the town didn't exist.
Yeah, 28,000 people are all going to get together and lie.
I've been to the town. How is it? I've been there. Like, what is it? The Twilight Zone? So anyway, some of them are ridiculous. No, but, and you know, I'm glad that you mentioned that about research and sourcing it, because that's what you do in screening Sandy Hook. Everything's sourced, right? You have everything there. But when you mentioned YouTube video, this potato guy, and then I'm sure you're very familiar, and most people are who've researched this, We Need to Talk About Sandy Hook by, I believe it was Sophia Smallstrom's, the only
right.
person.
I took that apart. I took right. her video apart. And then I thought, well, gosh, I did that. If people will visit my website, spingola.com, and there's a button there, Sandy Hook Research. Just click on that button. It's one of the top buttons there. Deanna Sandy Hook Research. And I have so many links there. So much information there. And the first thing that I did was I did a critique of her video. And part one, part two, part three. And then I discontinued the project to work on my book. But okay. A lot of what she was using was pieces and parts. Actually, she was used copyrighted material. And when she started out, it was a bus ride through to Sandy Hook School. And but anyway, I did a real big critique on that.
You picked that apart, and then there's also, and I found this through your research, right? The book Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. So when that came out and then it was made free, and that was, I don't want to say brilliant marketing, but it was some pretty slick marketing from them, right? So they say, look, the book has been banned from Amazon, right? What is the forbidden content, right? And so that got a lot of people who were interested in the topic, like
sure.
me. Right? So then you go, well, there's got to be something in there. And then I, you know, going through your stuff, I find out, because you mentioned the copyright issues of the Smallstrom film, this guy had copyright issues up one side, down the other.
You know that he put an entire website.
Yeah, you said, I know it from you.
Website in his book, plus yeah. he used copyrighted photos. He actually took copyright, he took photos of the students and the teachers. It was awful.
The famous photo of them coming out of the school, right?
Yes, yeah. yes. And I went through the entire book and tore it apart.
Oh, that was a trash book. I mean, there was nothing in there.
A piece of garbage.
Right, and you downloaded it expecting, oh, there's some bombshells in here. He's got all the evidence. I mean, he's saying nobody died. He's got to have the proof. There's nothing in there. I mean, the best that he had at one point, I mean, it was ridiculous, but he said, well, look, there's pads. They moved the furniture. It's a studio set. Like, they're moving. Like, he had these ridiculous things in there, and you're like, anyway. So, but when you hear that headline, Amazon banned a book, you think there's got to be something to it.
Sure.
But I found out, looking at your stuff, well, it was just, and I just started cracking up. It's because he had copyright issues on one side down the other. You know,
right.
Nobody would have even looked at the thing if Amazon didn't ban it for that. So it was almost like a good ploy.
It was almost like he did it on purpose.
On purpose, right.
Yes, yes.
To get
and
it banned.
It was really a compilation of other people's work.
Work. He would take stuff from YouTube videos, other blogs, and threads from like Reddit. I don't know where he was getting this stuff, but like, I'm like, this sounds familiar. Like it would, none of it was original work. If right. there is, you know, in the conspiracy field, because they were all just taking things that other people said and expanding on it and never, people, like you said, going, not going to the source. Yeah.
You didn't even know who they were. And I contacted the one that is in Australia, and I asked him some specific questions, and, he couldn't answer. He didn't even know which side of the, he didn't even know that the sun actually comes up and goes down. He had everything so mixed up. And the pictures were, oh gosh, it was awful. It was just terrible.
This is what ends up happening, and this is what's happened to me, is when you get into this topic and they make a claim, someone makes a claim. This happened to me many times online. For example, why are people going in circles here? Where are the porta potties? Who cleaned it up? Where are the death certificates? Right? I go, here, I got the death certificate from Sandy Hook Facts. He paid $50 and right. you can get it yourself, right? Send it to them, they go, okay, well forget about that, right? What about this? So they just move on, right? And right. then, and when you give them the proof and they say, well, there's no photos of the school being open, I go, I got the Newtown Bee. Here's a Christmas party. Here's a Halloween party. Here's a fireman doing a conference, right? And I go, well, let's move on to that. So they just keep moving on to other topics because they know they've been beat. Or when you send a document or a death certificate, right? They'll say, well, that could be faked. So nothing will satisfy them. And it's just, it's this sick dementia. I still know people to this day, I could beat them over the head, who still have questions about Sandy Hook. To this day. But they won't read your book. Right? They won't read your book.
They don't want to know.
Right. Well, yeah.
They don't want to know.
Right. So, all right, let's move on, because I don't want to just keep bashing some of the hoaxers, because this is just going to give them more fuel to the fire, and they're going to love it and go, oh, let's go after Exum again. And then nobody's safe. But, you know, we're not slandering anybody. We're just talking about facts here.
Sure.
When it comes to your book, I just want to talk about this, because people are thinking, especially the way I'm talking in my history with Sandy Hook. Okay, screening Sandy Hook. This entire thing's going to be about Sandy Hook. You know, the shooting, the drugs involved, the families and the tragedy. But not so fast, my faithful listeners, because a lot of the first, let's say, three parts really deal with vaccines, psych drugs. It's like not until the fourth part or chapter that we really get into Adam Lanza and his issues.
Exactly. You have to go 42% into the book to get to Adam Lanza.
I'd say that's about right. I have my Kindle here, so I'd say that's an accurate number. Now, why is that? Why did you have to set such a, let's say, the groundwork? And it's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of information here.
I tend to be redundant. I tend to want to lay foundations. I do put in a lot of detail. And as I go through this, I think, gosh, I should have shortened that sentence here or that here. But I like to give people, groundwork so that you don't just say, okay, here's Adam Lanza and the reason that he's a weird person or the reason he did this. I wanted to give groundwork and also express my feelings about the so-called standard of care and psych drugs and just regular prescription drugs and vaccines and the damage that they do. And the fact that, okay, it used to be that children got three vaccines, and then it went up to 20, and then 23, and then 1986 they passed the law which took all liability away from the vaccine companies. And now, what is it? There are 72 vaccines that children have to have before they could, by the time they're 18. Seriously, are there 72 diseases or illnesses that you're scared that you might get? And people, parents just seem to go along with this because the FDA said they should do this. Or the CDC has set this standard of how many vaccines they should have. People aren't asking enough questions. And so I thought, okay, I want to address these things. I want to give some background on how the well, like the Rockefeller medical monopoly. How did that happen? What about the polio vaccine? What happened there? What about the smallpox vaccine that was disseminated in 1898 in the Philippines to a totally, totally virgin population who had never heard of smallpox? And then because there was a bunch of smallpox vaccine left over somehow on the shelves, then they just gave it to the military, the U.S. military, then disseminated or attempted to disseminate this vaccine to the people in the Philippines, which, of course, brings up the subject of this vaccine that the military is supposed to disseminate to the Americans. So there was a pattern there. They did it in the Philippines. The military did it in the Philippines. So now they're going to do it to us here, or attempt to. So, I wanted to give a background so that people could have, see where this led up to see how this person, Adam Lanza, what made him do what he did, or what contributed to what he did. Right. And you can also say, well, what contributed to the other people who have committed mass shootings?
Well, almost all of them are on psych drugs. They were. Almost everyone. SSRIs, every single one of them almost. And I find that in almost every case.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, you said something that just, because I was looking at my notes here, right? You said, you mentioned the vaccines and how they were disseminated in the Philippines. But I didn't know this, and I just have, this is going to the polio vaccine, by the way. The contaminated SV40 polio vaccines.
I admitted it.
And you have the reference, but the FDA allowed them to sell it, right?
Yes.
Knowing that it was contaminated, which should scare the living crap out of everybody about any vaccine you're ever going to take. And then you find out they later, some of the makers were adding, rabbit, Bugs Bunny anti-SV40 antibodies. What? It's like, it was a concoction, a stew, just a concoction of God knows what. And they're injecting it into people knowing it's getting them sick and giving them cancer and, and people, so people have to know that. I've said this before to people. If a cop, Deanna, showed up to your door, right, and said, excuse me, you're gonna take this, you'd slam the door and say, get out of here and get your gun, right? But if a guy in a lab, in a white lab coat, walks up and says, this will help you, let me give you this shot. Oh, sure, no problem. That's the right thing to do. And they're gonna do this, and we don't talk about, we call it the C word, the coronavirus on this show, because my listeners are sick of it. Like, everyone just got coronavirus overload. But I will say this, and you know where they're going with this. The next thing will be, you will take this untested, by the way, Putin's vaccine, go ahead and take it. You people are insane if you take that. But the next vaccine that comes for coronavirus will be mandatory. And they're going to make it so you're not going to be able to get on a plane. Your kids aren't going to go to school. You may not be able to go into a store and get food. You may not be able to go in the bank and get money if they scan you and you haven't had this vaccine. Does that scare you? That has got to put a chill down your spine.
It does. However, I think there are more of us, us meaning the people who, excuse me, who are aware of the dangers of vaccines.
Mm-hmm. So-called anti-vaxxers.
Hopefully there are more anti-vaxxers than there are people who are standing in line to get vaccines. However, for those of us who do not want a vaccine, can visit freedomtaker.com and download the document. It's a conditional document. You can download it. It's 8 pages long. You fill out the front page, and you're saying, sure, I'll be happy to take your vaccine, but on these conditions. So you're not saying, no, I refuse your vaccine. But you're saying, yes, I'd be happy to. Could you please fill out these forms? We need to do everything that we can to protect ourselves. But the problem with the population is that they're programmed. They watch TV and they get programmed to think, oh my gosh, I've got to stand in line. I've got to be the first to get this vaccine. And they are programming people to think that they have to get this, not because they can't get on a plane, but because they don't want to get sick. They're not thinking. They're not looking at the research. They're just, if they were looking at the research, they would realize that there's just certain populations that have perished because of so-called COVID-19. And those people are what people would refer to as useless eaters. There are people in nursing homes that are maybe collecting a pension, or they're useless eaters. They're not contributing to society. And so, and that's true in Sweden, in Italy, the people who've died in those two countries. I was talking to a gentleman in my third hour on Saturday who said that all the people that had died there were in nursing homes. They were collecting a pension. And if they all died, then the government wouldn't have to pay the pension, because Sweden itself didn't even close down. But somehow they got these people, just coincidentally, the people in nursing homes got the disease.
Right, and not only that, they're cooking the books. I've been talking about this for months, and I said I wasn't going to talk about COVID, and here we are, but that's okay. You're a special guest. But they're saying people that have had all sorts of ailments, who had chronic disease, have been in the hospital, then they go, let's test them for COVID. Oh, they've got COVID. Now they mark it down as a death of COVID-19.
Hi.
And there's all of these headlines. Sometimes it's a celebrity. There was this famous celebrity I talked about in the UK, right? He was a famous comedian. I forget the name right now, but it was like so-and-so, right? Dies with COVID-19 at 70 years old, right? And so, oh my God, everybody's getting it, you think. And then you read the headline and it's the wording, Deanna, right? He had it. He died with it. He didn't die of it. You find out he had like a quadruple heart attack or whatever it was, and he was in the hospital, but they tested him and he had it. So they're cooking the books. And part of the daily scare tactics, like you were mentioning, where every day it's a death toll, right? How many people have gotten it? How many people have died around the world? Every day, every station, they're ratcheting it up. So that there will be one, in my opinion, like you said, fear, the reptile brain just jumps to like whatever will save me. And it's going to be the vaccination. That's the only thing that will save the economy. That's the only thing that will save you and your children and the elderly. And if you don't do it, you don't care about other people, Deanna. That's the big one, right? You don't care about anyone else. You only care about yourself. That's how they're going to get you.
And these swabs that you're supposed to stick up your nose, or that people are sticking up noses, those are, you have receptors at the back of your nose, at the top of your nose, from your brain, and you're disturbing that. You're disturbing those receptors. You're actually swabbing part of somebody's brain out.
Oh,
and there are
wonderful.
Also people who have not been tested, who stood in line for a couple hours to get tested, and then said, oh, forget this, I'm not doing this. And 2 weeks later, they get a note saying, you've been tested positive, when they didn't even do the test.
Right. It's bogus that you cannot trust these numbers at all. I've been saying that for how deep are we into this thing now? Months. One thing I want to talk about, because I know we don't have much time. It's already 7:35, you can believe that. Vaccinations. Now, I went through the entire section on vaccinations, and it comes up later in the book as well. This is the first part of the book. I know that you talk about contaminated polio vaccinations, and I talked about this on a previous show, the war between Dr. Salk and Dr. Sabin, and they both had different vaccines, and they were in a rush, right? They wanted to be the number one, the guy. They wanted to be the guy that cured the world.
And they both of them were wrong. Both of them were terrible.
And unscrupulous. They were not good men. They were not good men. And they lied up one side, down the other.
Absolutely.
But, okay, great. Well, I know that from your book as well. But here's what I wanted to ask you, because I didn't get that from your book, but I'm sure that you've researched this. What do you think about a contaminated polio vaccine creating AIDS? Have you looked into that at all?
I know that that is along the same line. I did not cover that in my book. Let me just,
The only reason I asked, because there was a hint in one chapter, about contaminating and exploding kind of in the San Francisco area through a vaccination. Yes. But it was almost kind of like conspiratorial and people thought that. But there's a book called, The River. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It was many years ago, but it was The River, A Journey of AIDS Through Africa. Like they kind of trace, and the guy does a great job. Okay. So you're from, you did so much work talking about the polio vaccine. I wonder if she knows about the connection between AIDS and how it just exploded, right? Where these guys were working, saying they weren't using certain primates. They were. That later on, there were documents and photos showing these guys working with the very monkeys. They said they weren't. And then there's interviews with some of the, I guess you'd call them nurses, right? Some of the local people that worked there as nurses that were cutting up the monkey, killing the monkeys, cutting up the monkeys, grinding up the body parts. And so they were there and saw this and said, no, we used all sorts of monkeys. We were using these monkeys. Trucks and trucks and trucks of monkeys were coming in daily. Like it was crazy. So anyway, that's something we could maybe explore on another show, you know, if we do one, but that's a whole nother topic that I thought maybe you'd be interested in. And I don't know enough about it to speak on it, but that book really opened up my eyes and I'm like, she's done so much about this work on these vaccines. I wonder if she knows about the implication with AIDS. And once these doctors have been confronted with all this stuff, they denied it. And then kind of like, at one point, he kind of did. I forget if it was Sabian or like this.
Go ahead. In 1977, Dr. Jonas Salk admitted to a Senate committee that mass polio vaccinations caused most of the polio cases throughout the country.
Yeah. Yep. And then that's after he denied any of this nonsense for his entire career and made an entire career out of it. Like he was famous.
Made a lot of money.
Of money. Well, I mean, so, okay. We'll move on past that. But like when I was reading this in your book, I'm like, oh gosh, it's going to come. She's going to drop the bombshell. Where's it? Cause I'm like, if anyone's got the proof, Deanna's got it. She's going to have a document in here saying like, here's where the AIDS started. You're going to want to read that book if you haven't already. And that goes to everybody out there that's listening. So moving on to the psych drugs. We talked about the vaccinations. Let's get into the psych drugs and, you know, wait, before I do that, I got to ask you one thing, because you did a lot of research on this. We'll get to that in a minute. Thimerosal, before I forget, because we're kind of still on the same thing. What is thimerosal and why is it so deadly? And why should people be aware of it?
It's mercury. It's the same kind of, okay, if you drop a thermometer, if a doctor drops a thermometer, they have to call in hazmat, have that cleaned up.
And I remember that as a kid. Remember the thermometers your mom would get and you had to be real careful if you broke those. Everyone was scared if they did. Yeah.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yes. But now they say, but it's okay if you put it in your, if you, inject somebody with it.
And mix it with a vaccine and use it as a compound.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right.
How did these things get approved? Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Because if you, I think the whole thing about vaccines and about big pharma, unless you're talking about total depopulation, but if you're just talking about big pharma, what you're doing when you vaccinate children is you are creating a patient for life. The people at the pediatricians, their entire focus is on vaccines. And that is what they make their living on. And there's a couple books. I'm looking over here for these books that I have. Let's see.
You must have quite a library.
Oh, gosh.
I could imagine.
Mendelssohn wrote a book. He wrote two books. He said, How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor. And he also talks about the Confessions of a Medical Heretic. And he says, and I've got a lot of books on vaccines, maybe 25 books on vaccines. But what you're doing is that when a woman has a baby, they used to have them at home, and they were fine. They were good.
Healthy, right.
And then all of a sudden you have these well baby checkups. You take your baby in to make sure that they're healthy. And they weigh them. You could weigh them at home. And they measure them. You could measure them at home. But what they want to do is start with the vaccines. And so then you have a patient for life because the vaccines increase, they cause a lot of things.
They cause a lot of issues, health issues and mental issues.
Exactly. And they knew this. They knew it wasn't as if it was an accident. They knew this going in. And it's very interesting. DuPont, which is a very evil company, and I've done a lot of research on DuPont since I interviewed a lawyer, Robert A. Blatt. I did that back in June. And he was talking about how DuPont has really poisoned the entire world. Even the polar bears in Alaska have poisons. And so in the 1920s, DuPont supplied the ethyl mercury chloride called K1. And it was invented by a guy named Koresh. And they got this patent. And it was used in the forestry industry. Mm-hmm. But there were people that started getting sick because they were using it on the wood. And so then you started having people by 1946 or so that were getting sick. And Eli Lilly took it on. They decided that they were going to make something called methylate, which is thimerosal.
Thimerosal.
Where you just put it on your skin if you had a cut or something. And these things had mercury. They were filled with mercury. And and it was Dr. Rimland, Bernard Rimland, in 1964, that published the first book, Infantile Autism, The Syndrome and Its Implications for Neural Theory of Behavior. autism is very recent.
Right.
Very, very recent. And it used to be 1 in 500 people, and now it's what, 1 in 30? And especially for boys, because boys are more susceptible to the mercury. I'm not sure why, but they are more susceptible.
It's exploding. And when I was a kid, I don't remember, and I'm sure there might have been some. I don't remember them. Maybe it wasn't labeled at the time, right? When I was a child, I was born in 71, but there were no kids that had autism that I remember. Now, I mean, if you go to a movie theater, half the kids in the theater have autism. I mean, you know, you go to the, it's crazy. And also, I remember when I was a younger lad that cancer was ultra rare. Remember that, Deanna? Like a child had cancer, people would fly in from all over the world. Doctors would come in from everywhere.
Right.
Like, why does this child have cancer? This never happened. Now it's like commonplace.
No children had cancer. It was old people's disease.
Right.
And now you have these little children that are, what's that special hospital, where they take you free and
the Shriners or the Cancer Institute?
Marlo Thomas's father.
Oh yeah, that's not the Shriner? No, who is it? I don't know. I know who you're talking about.
And now you have regular hospitals set up just
St. Jude
children. Yes, St. Jude. And you have these these children. And when I see, I haven't seen a commercial on them for a long time because I don't turn my TV on anymore. I unplugged it and that's
good for you.
Done with it. But I felt so bad seeing these little children have to go through chemo and lose their hair and have all these horrific treatments. What? That's torture.
It's brutal.
That is.
And take it from someone who's seen people go through chemo. It is brutal to watch them go through, and for them, I mean, just to watch them. Can you imagine what they're going through? It's horrible.
Yes.
Deanna, we are like short on time. You're so easy to talk to. So getting back to the psych drugs, and now we got to wrap it up with Adam Lanza. How did you, now I'm looking, when I'm looking at your book, I'm like shocked and appalled that I don't know how I didn't find this, but that a doctor that I don't know, and it's hard to tell because his records are sealed, so you don't know what he took, but a doctor who was working at one point with Adam Lanza was known for prescribing all sorts of concoctions to children.
Oh, yes.
And I read the one, let me see if I have it here on my bookmarks.
Dr. Fox. That's
him.
Gosh.
And there's one child that was probably around Adam's age around that time who had five or six different drugs they had this kid?
Yes.
I couldn't believe I was like, if I had that as a grown man, I would have lost my man. It would have killed an elephant. But they give it to a kid who's already, I was in shock when I read what they were giving. I didn't even know what some of that stuff was.
It was terrible. He had a lot of things going on in his private life. And he ended up leaving the country. He went to New Zealand. And,
are you talking about the doctor or the?
Yeah,
the Dr. Fox, yeah.
Yeah. He went to New Zealand. And, it was really unfortunate that they took him, Adam's parents took him to see Dr. Fox. And if he was giving this other child, who was the same age, probably weighed the same, was very similar to Adam Lanza, if he was prescribing all these drugs for this other child, chances are he was prescribing those drugs for Adam. And the thing is, doctors get, they get brownie points for the number of drugs they give out. When a pharmaceutical rep calls on a doctor, they offer them spa treatments and vacations and
perks,
all kinds of perks to prescribe these drugs. And we do not know what Dr. Fox prescribed for Lanza, because when he escaped the country, he said that he took the records with him and that they weren't available, which is very interesting. But,
well, yeah, okay.
But I'm pretty certain that Adam Lanza was on SSRIs. Because when he was young, when he was born, his parents were well-educated. His mother had him C-section, which means that they cut the cord and the cord bled. When you have a baby C-section and they cut the cord, the brain is not getting that cord blood, which is kind of a bonus, okay?
Okay.
And then she went back to work really soon. She had him in daycare. He was a headbanger. He got his full shot. He got all of his vaccines. He was born in 1992. And that was right after they increased, all of the vaccines to, I'm not sure exactly the number, but he got them all, and he did not speak until he was 3. He was a headbanger. He did not like to be held.
When you say headbanger, just for the audience, you mean he would literally bang his head. He was not into heavy metal. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's what some children do with autism. I don't know why it it releases some sort of, I don't know, it just makes them, gives them comfort of some sort. But I believe that probably by the time he was six, and according to a babysitter that he had, who lived in the neighborhood, he was taking something. He was very, very, very focused on tasks that he was engaged in, whether he was building blocks or Tinker Toys or whatever he was doing. He was very, very focused. He was diagnosed as having Asperger's syndrome, which is no longer in the DSM-5, but you can find it in the DSM-4. And he really didn't like that diagnosis, but his parents thought, well, that's a good diagnosis. And so they took him to Dr. Fox, and heaven only knows what Dr. Fox put him on.
Right. Go ahead. No. I'm sure it's probably what he was giving this other kid, right? Because why wouldn't he? What's he going to stray? Is he going to stray from it and say, no, you know what? We're going to do something holistic with this kid. We're exercise and sunlight. I doubt it.
Sure.
It may not be the same concoction, but of course he'd get him with a bunch of drugs. I mean, come on.
Okay. So what this other 10-year-old child was on was Celexa, Remeron, Effexor, and Wellbutrin.
If you're on just one of those, you could lose your mind.
Then he also subscribed Neurontin, which is an anti-epileptic kind of a drug, Buspar, and an anti-anxiety Zyprexa, which is an antipsychotic. And on top of that, gave him Adderall, which is an
antidepressant. Oh, my God.
Okay, so a parent, why would a parent even allow that? But we have all grown up in government schools where somebody with authority, an authority figure, we think, oh, they know what they're talking about. And this child, this 10-year-old child, never recovered, never got over it. He's ruined. He's unable to leave home, and he's so disabled that
His life is ruined. His life is wrecked. And, you know, it's interesting you say that he was unable to leave the home after Adam probably, you know, had, and I shouldn't say his name. I know people don't like to refer, so the killer, they don't like to refer to him. But anyway, the killer probably got a concoction of these drugs, and shortly before the shooting, and before, and by the way, everyone remembers he killed his mother had said, you know, he hasn't left the house, barely even his room, for like 3 months, right? So this is the kind of thing that kind of happens when somebody's been on these things. And I'll say this, as seeing an adult, a grown adult who was prescribed Adderall, it completely changed them. And I had a friend that was on it, and I was dating a girl at the time, and I mentioned it to her. I said, yeah, you know, it really just kind of changed this guy's personality. He's not the same. And she said, oh, I had to, like, you know, break up with a friend of mine. And this was a, you know, she was a professor, right? She was at Princeton, and so was this other girl. They were both like in getting their doctorates or whatever. And so educated, right? This isn't someone who's like, you know, an idiot but just listened to a damn doctor who gave her Adderall. She shaved her head, you know, a la Britney Spears, changed her personality, and she had like a freak out and didn't do well. And like, and it was the Adderall. So, and that's an adult. Like, you know, you think an adjusted, you know, mature adult, what does this do to a kid? You put him on not just Adderall, but the other that you mentioned. I didn't even know some of those. My God. And then you wonder why somebody freaks out and shoots people. Go ahead, Deanna.
Exactly. And he developed akathisia.
What's that?
It's where you have to keep your feet moving.
Oh.
And so he would go over to this theater during the summer months particularly, and use this machine, this Dance Revolution. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it would keep he would do this for 6 or 7 hours. Now, he was a vegetarian. He needed to have his food separated on the plate. He changed his clothes frequently. He had a lot of stuff going on.
Right.
A lot of stuff. But he had another focus, and that was on mass killers.
Yes.
And
didn't he have charts and
yes, he had charts, and he kept track on Wikipedia. He made changes in Wikipedia on different people who had engaged in a mass shooting.
Oh, that's comforting. He was updating the Wikipedia that some of us reference. That's comforting.
Uh-huh, yes. And he wanted to excel. He wanted to be the best. And he was clearly unhappy. His father, in an interview, said that there was something wrong. Well, he was socially awkward. He's full of anxiety. He couldn't sleep. He was stressed. He couldn't concentrate. He had a hard time learning. He had an awkward walk, reduced eye contact. And his parents had gotten a divorce. I think they divorced in 2009. And it was clearly, first of all, he learned how to shoot when he was four, shoot a gun. And so he was very familiar with guns. His mother, very unwisely, I don't know why she did this, had guns in the house.
Right.
They were unlocked. There was a Target room downstairs. The other thing that was
a Target room? They had a shooting gallery downstairs?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Did, yes. Now, when you are on SSRIs, you have photosensitivity. In other words, you cannot stand the sunlight. So he was not going out anymore during the sun when it was sunny. He also covered his windows with black plastic to keep the sun from coming in. And that was photosensitivity. And Del Shannon, who was a singer, was on Prozac for 6 days, and he did a concert, I think, in North Dakota, and he was complaining about the lights being so bright. And Del Shannon actually committed suicide 6 days after he started on Prozac. And he also mentioned, you know, this photosensitivity.
Yeah, and this keeps happening over and over. I mean, I did a video about Chris Cornell, who I'm convinced, you know, pills again, got another
sure.
famous person. Prince, another one. Pills got him and you know, prescription.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, this just keeps happening. Deanna, we're up against the hour here. We're going to go, but any last words, anything else you want to say? And I want to say, just on behalf of myself and other people who've researched, thank you for your book, because your book answered a lot of questions, and people need to go to screeningsandyhook.net to check that out, or spingola.com. Any parting words about this whole topic?
Okay, you can find all of the victims there, photo images of their open casket funerals, all the funerals. I have all the funerals, the processions, the photos, images. These people were slaughtered. These children were slaughtered by this monster.
Madman.
Yes.
Get your kids off the pills, folks. And if you're on them,
yes.
You got to get yourself off them. You got to wean yourself off. It's got to be a detox. You can't just go off immediately. That's another freak out you'll have. But read the book, Screening Sandy Hook. And if you want to ever take another vaccine or pill again, I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked. Deanna, thank you so much for being on the show. I hope to have you on again soon. You're an excellent guest.
Oh, well, thank you. I would love to be on again.
Thank you. All right. Bye, Deanna. Wow. Amazing. Thanks, folks. Bye.